trumpeting irrelevancy of the fake news mainstream media, melting of the snowflakes. Oh, the trumpeting continues, and it is just so entertaining to watch. I forgot to check up on the billion bimbo bitches. I gotta look into that. I gotta see where the fuck they're at, if they've made it any farther. Because you can scream, shout, whine, cry, snivel, piss, moan, look for a fucking safe space. You can shove your opinions up your ass. That way the Trump and Fuhrer's cock has something to keep it company. I still have to override the urge to say Obama's cock. I still have not completely adapted to the Messiah not being the president anymore. Of course, anyway, hi. Hey, what's up, y'all? I am the great one himself. I am the founder of the Cynical Libertarian Society, CYNLIVSOC.com, on the motherfucking interwebs. Podcasting for 12 years is right here, stating the obvious. Podcast is the weapons platform from which I launched the cruise missile of my intellect, owns and destroys, stupid motherfucking statist all around the world. Does not matter where the statists are. You can be hiding in a cave in Afghanistan, and the cruise missile of my intellect will still lock in on you, seek you out, and blow you the fuck up. Just like a missile launched from a flying robot by Hussein Obama, the Messiah, the first affirmative action president, half black president, second coming of Jesus Christ. Yes. Greetings, I am the great one himself, Cynical Libertarian Society, blah blah blah. In the control room, the lovely and adorable Randy. You can find us on the interweb, CYNLIVSOC.com, on the interweb, and send us email. God. Email address is God. Dog spelled backwards, God. At CYNLIBSOC.com, as I whack the microphone stand with the chair. Alright, fuck it, let's move some shit here. And then we'll whack some more microphone. There we go, alright, I think I'm finished hitting things against the wall now. Greetings, it is Sunday. I'm mostly rested. I finally got 8 hours of sleep last night for the first time in a week because I was doing theater gigs and I had 3 gigs in 2 different locations in 6 days. Did not go to bed before 2 a.m. for an entire week. And the last night, wrapped up the last gig. Oh, so nice. We finished early because it ended early. I actually got back home around 9:30. And I was... Or no, yeah, was it 9:30? Actually, it was a little before 9:30, but the point is, I was in bed at 9:30. Read a book for a little bit. I'm still reading the book I mentioned about ADHD. It's absolutely fascinating. Fascinating. There will definitely be a book discussion on this one. It is really interesting. Just the lengths that the pharmacy... Yeah, here's a shock. Hey. Okay, brace yourselves. This is going to be a shock. Did you know that the pharmaceutical corporations are in it for the money? I know. Who knew, right? Wait, you mean they're trying to sell ADHD drugs so they can make money? What? No way! Wait, hold it. Hey, did you know? Did you know that some of the scientists who say that there are all these kids out there who have ADHD and need medication for it? Did you know that a bunch of those scientists get money from pharmaceutical corporations? No! Right? Who knew? Who would have ever guessed? Oh my god. it's fascinating to me that when a scientist says, well, smoking tobacco won't necessarily make you drop dead instantly, there's this instant, oh my God, the tobacco corporations are paying him off. But when you've got all these scientists, in air quotes, coming out and saying, why, yes, the 30%, maybe even more, of all children have ADHD and they need medication. Not one person says, and how much money have you gotten from the pharmaceutical corporations? Oh, it's a very entertaining book. Let me promise you that. Anyhow, got in bed by 9:30, read a little bit more of the book. 10 o'clock, rolled over, went to sleep, slept for 8 fucking hours. It was glorious. Ah, glorious. Then spent another 2 hours laying in bed, falling asleep, waking back up, falling asleep, waking back up. Finally dragged my ass out of bed, did some shit around the house, got some shit done, made a little productivity, and now, here we are at the palatial recording studios of the Cynical Libertarian Society, getting ready to go back to, speaking of book discussions, continue talking about the book The Internet Is Not the Answer by Andrew Keen. Where the fuck did I leave off? Where are my notes? What the fuck is going on here? Then on... Oh, ow, shit. On with Original Sin. That's here. Am I reading this whole section? Holy shit. Uh-huh. Okay, this is a lot of shit. All right, fuck it. Who cares? Get a big drink of water there and prepare myself for this. Sally sells seashells by the seashore. Quote, the personal is the political, unquote, was a libertarian cry of the 60s counterculture revolution. Again, let me stop and emphasize that Andrew Keen doesn't really know what a libertarian is. He doesn't define the word libertarian, and he uses it throughout the book as an insult. The 60s counterculture revolution, I don't think it was libertarian. I don't think so. But rather than being political, today's personal revolution is all about money and wealth. Pretty sure Andrew Keen did not write this book for free, but it's okay. Remember, money is only evil when other people have money. In our digital age, the personal is the economic, and there's nothing liberating about it at all. In addition to not understanding what a libertarian is, or even might be, or could be, or defining it, he also doesn't understand economics. As Aaron Cleary has pointed out in some of his books and in many of his videos, money is simply a form of stored time. And to say that in our digital age, the personal is the economic, no, the economic has always been the personal. Economics has always been personal. Economics, money is time. Time is personal. We all exist. We all have so much time. No more, no less. Without economics, money is what allows you to access other people's time and free up your time. Andrew Keen's concept that a link between the personal and the economic is somehow a bad thing illustrates that he doesn't really understand what the fuck economics is. He simply dislikes people who have different opinions and different worldviews than he does. Just as the Kodak tragedy decimated the economic heart of Rochester, so the internet is destroying our old industrial economy. transforming what was once a relatively egalitarian system. No. There was never... No. We... What? Into a winner-take-all economy of what Tyler Cohen, who I don't know who the fuck that is, calls billionaires and beggars. Okay, no. The egalitarian system. There... No. There has never been an egalitarian system. If you go back far enough in the history of the United States, you either had a system where people who were competent and capable got jobs and other people didn't, and then you very quickly transform, and maybe there was a little egalitarian period in there, but actually, there was. What does this mean, egalitarian? Like, everyone is equal? No. I mean, there's never been a time when, economically speaking, everyone was equal. So we went from this time when you had to be competent and capable to get a job to where we are now, where affirmative action and quotas ensure that skin color and gender and gender identification preferences and all this other stuff are more important than anything when it comes to getting a job. And as far as income distribution, if that's what he's talking about, because I'm not really sure what the fuck he's talking about, well, there have always been people with more money and more resources than other people, and there always will be. Now, if you're saying it's getting worse now, well, okay, it's getting worse. We just had 8 years of Obama. We just had 8 years of spreading the wealth around. How can it be getting worse? Rich people getting richer, while this may indeed have something to do with the internet, number one, remember, the rich people like Donald Trump, who don't pay taxes and everything, right? They use the loopholes to not pay tax. Not that anyone should be paying. There should be no taxes. Anarcho-capitalist here, for just a reminder, there should be no fucking taxes. But the world we live in has taxes. We're sticking to reality for right now. We're not talking about philosophicals, what should be and shouldn't be. Stick to reality. Taxes exist. If rich people are not paying taxes, that's because there are loopholes there which they can exploit, like Google keeping all their, or was it Google or Apple? He talks about in the book, it was either Google or Apple, talking about how they keep a bunch of their money offshore so they don't have to pay taxes on it. Okay, if those things are happening, it's because the corporations and the rich people are taking advantages of loopholes in the tax code. Where'd the tax code come from? The government. Well, who runs the government? Politicians. Where do politicians come from? They get elected. So if the rich are getting richer, whose fault would that be? Oh, it would be the fault of the voters. I know. See, this is the thing. You cocksuckers out there, you want to fucking talk about democracy, you know, but then as soon as the government does shit like that, you want, well, we can't control the government. They're getting the rich people not paying any taxes. Well, democracy. Why don't you fucking democracy the fuck on up and elect some politicians who will raise taxes on rich people? Because the answer is you're not going to, because number one, you're lazy. Number two, you're stupid. Number three, democracy doesn't work. Also, if the reason that these evil libertarians on the internet are getting rich, remember, why does Apple Corporation have so much fucking money? Well, because you dumbasses keep giving it to them. Unlike Obamacare, which is a law that forces you to buy health insurance from privately owned corporations, there is no law forcing you to purchase every fucking iteration of the fucking iPhone. You are voluntarily giving the multi-billion dollar corporation Apple your fucking money. And then you want to sit around and fucking piss and moan and bitch because of the fucking rich people are getting richer. You can stop buying shit from them any fucking time you want, except you can't, because you're just like a fucking heroin addict. Ah, I do heroin because I want to. I can stop anytime I want. Quick, come here. Hold on. I gotta tap a vein. I can stop anytime I want. I've said it before, I'll say it again. Most of these rich people didn't get rich by just sitting down and shitting out the money. Yes, some of them did inherit the money. But even in that case, well, where did their parents get the money? Rich people got their money because much of that money used to belong to stupid people who gave it to the rich people. You buy their shit. Now, some of these rich people got rich because the government gave them money, or the government gave them tax breaks, or the government let them build a sports stadium, you know, and where does the government come from? Oh, let's go with it. Where does the government come from? It comes from democracy. It's democracy. Remember, it's democracy when your candidate wins, but it's the Russian hackers when the other candidate wins. Okay, so I want to hear this fucking whining, pissing and moaning about rich people getting richer. That is your fault. No, not the people behind you. You. You keep buying the shit the corporations produce. You keep voting for the politicians that let the corporations have tax breaks and let the corporations even exist. Without the government, there is no such thing as a corporation. A corporation is a legal fiction. If you get rid of the state, if there's no government, there is no corporation. Rather than just a city, it's a whole economy that's losing its center. For all Silicon Valley's claims that the internet has created more equal opportunity and distribution of wealth, the new economy actually resembles a donut, with a gaping hole in the middle where an old industrial system, millions of workers were once paid to manufacture valuable products. Now, I agree with Andrew here. He's right. The internet has not created more equal opportunity and certainly not more equal distribution of wealth. This economic inequality mirrors the feudal arrangements on Instagram, in which Justin Bieber has 11 million followers and follows nobody at all. While that may be true, I also think it's irrelevant to anything of substance. It's creating what the MIT economist Andrew McAfee and Bryn Jolson, I totally mutilated this guy's name, call an economy of stars and superstars. This new digital economy is a primary reason why life has become so much tougher for many of us over the last 25 years. Now, I'm not sure. It's been a while since I read this. I don't remember exactly where this is going, but if his contention is that Justin Bieber having 11 million followers has made my life more difficult, I would say that's not true. And it's why the internet, or at least the business model of internet companies like Instagram, Google, Twitter, Yelp, and Facebook, isn't the ideal platform for building an equitable economy in the networked 21st century. And of course, none of those things are... I mean, anyone who thinks that Google, Facebook, and Yelp are platforms for building an equitable economy is fucking stupid. Google, Facebook, and Yelp are there to make money for the stockholders of those corporations. What would make anyone think the purpose of Facebook is to build an equitable economy? In contrast with the dishonesty of selfie economics, the rules of the industrial Kodak economy were as crystalline as the images delivered on Kodachrome film. As Michael Moritz noted about what he called the second phase of the Industrial Revolution in northeastern U.S. cities like Detroit, shithole, Pittsburgh, shithole, and Rochester, shithole, were factories where factories were isolated from consumers. And just as there were clear walls separating workers and consumers, their economic roles were also clearly demarcated. Workers were paid cash in exchange for their labor, and consumers paid cash in exchange for Kodak's products. Quote, you press the button, we do the rest, unquote, which involved the development and manufacture of their physical products, which were shipped via retail channels to consumers. But the rest required significant investment in both capital and labor. This was the center of the old industrial economy, where Kodak created enormous value and was thus worth $31 billion a quarter century ago. So, back in 1989, those 145,000 unionized Kodak workers in the many research facilities, photo labs, and factories dotting the entire Rochester area were employed to invent and manufacture products that were then sold to consumers. Just as Instagram is the anti-Kodachrome product, it's also the anti-Kodak company, building an anti-Kodak economy. Let me stop for a second here and talk about this, because I didn't read the part in this book where he talks about all of this. And I'm going to put a little context on this. I'm jumping ahead to make sure I'm not going to repeat myself. Yeah, it looks like it. So earlier in the book, he talks about Kodak. He uses this as an example. And he contrasts Instagram to Kodak. And he looks at and talks about Instagram as that which killed Kodak. Now, I don't think he means it as Instagram was the one single only thing that killed Kodak. But he's at least looking at it as, you know, he's using it as a metaphor. And some things like Instagram is certainly a major player in that. And I agree with his point there. And you hear it a little bit here, and he talks about it otherwise in the book. Kodak, the corporation, when manufacturing cameras and film and all this other stuff, in the process of doing this, employed a lot of people, because there was, and I always talk about this when I talk about global warming and all these fucking corporations that try to tell you how fucking green they are, right? I point out to you that they're not green because of the supply chain. You have to dig the metal out of the ground, and you fucking extract the metal from the ore, and it uses toxic chemicals, and the metal has to be transported, and you burn fossil fuel, and all this other shit that's involved. Right? So anytime some fucking corporation tells you how green they are, it's bullshit. You can read the book, The Greenwashing Effect, which I did book discussion about here on this podcast, which is written by a global warming wacko. And he goes through and he looks at all these companies and corporations and celebrities who say they're green, and he explains to you why the fuck they're lying. And all of them are lying. Every goddamn one of them. Kodak, because it manufactured physical products, had this giant supply chain, which generated economic activity. Now, the global warming wackos will also point out how it had created environmental destruction. But it also created economic activity. Because you had to get the resources, the plastics and the metals and the chemicals, and you had to manufacture this stuff, and you had to transport it around, and you had to sell it, and you had to develop it. And you had to have people working, like they said, in the labs doing R&D. You had all these people employed. And Andrew Keen in this book talks about how when Kodak went out of business, not only did the people who had jobs lose their jobs, but because as a society, we've decided that we're going to just constantly give up more and more personal responsibility, right? There was a time when it was up to you to provide your own health insurance and to provide for your own healthcare cost. and it was up to you to provide for your own retirement. Well, now your health care is tied to your job, and for many people, their retirement is tied to their job. So when Kodak shut down, went out of business, all the people who had health care insurance through Kodak didn't have health insurance anymore. More importantly, the point he drives at in this book and talks about is the people who had pensions, who had Kodak company retirement plans, well, fuck. Now they have nothing. And there is a great conflict here that the stupid people in our society don't understand, right? When you look at the stupid people, the sheep, they hate the corporations, okay? But they want the corporations to suffer. They want the corporations to pay more taxes and have less profits and all this other stuff. But at the same time, they want their retirement benefits. But most of them have their retirement benefits tied up in IRAs. IRAs only make money if the stock market makes money. Stock market only makes money if corporations make profits. Right? They want corporations to be punished and to suffer and all this other stuff. But at the same time, these people working for the corporations have this retirement plan with the corporation because they don't understand that when these people get old and they're getting their pension from the corporation, that's going to cost money for the corporation to be able to give them their pensions. Well, the corporations have to be making money. People want progress, but the progress, the emergence of something like Instagram, means the death of something like the Kodak Corporation. Now, this is not to say that we shouldn't have progress. This is to say that we have to accept, just like when man, you know, when the automobile was invented, the market for horse-drawn carriages went away. Those people lost their jobs, but they lost their jobs in a time when you didn't have to spend $300 a month on healthcare insurance. They lost their jobs at a time when people owned their own homes. They didn't just rent their home from the government by paying property tax. They owned their own homes. When you could save up money and retire, and you could save up money and you would have children, and your children would take care of you when you were older. So losing your job, while not a good thing, wasn't necessarily devastating. Okay, we now live in a society where the cost of living is way up there. People don't own their own homes. Your Social Security may not be there. If your pension is through the corporation, it may not be there. You have to buy, because it's the law, Obamacare for $300 a month or more. And so now, today, when people lose their jobs, they don't own their own home. They don't have a place they can live without paying rent. They may not have the support mechanism of family and children and all this other stuff. Not saying we shouldn't have progress. Progress is going to happen no matter what. I am saying that when you're celebrating the corporations going out of business, you have to understand you're also celebrating people becoming poor, people becoming less wealthy. And this is the same context in which there's the whining we just heard in this book about how the economy is becoming less egalitarian. So this is a complicated thing. I don't mean to simplify this. I'm not saying I haven't. Well, I do have the answer. The answer is to get rid of the state. The answer is to shut down the federal government. The answer is to let statism die. But that's not going to happen. That's not practical. In fact, we're going to get more government. One of the reasons we're going to get more government is because as corporations go under and collapse, not that all corporations are going to go under and collapse. I think what's going to happen realistically is the number of corporations will become fewer as mergers and acquisitions and all this other stuff take place. And the number of poor people in relationship to the number of rich people will increase. And this is just going to increase statism because, for example, every time, so Kodak shuts down. So now suddenly you have all these people, they don't have jobs. They've lost their retirement benefits. So what happens? They become welfare recipients. Now they are beholden to the government for their existence. And they're going to vote Democrat, and you're going to get more government, and the government's going to expand because there's more people on welfare now, and it's just going to get bigger and bigger and bigger and continue to snowball. So the internet, computer software, cell phones, technology, whatever advancements, you know, replacing existing industries is going to displace workers. It's going to alter the economy. And there's not much we can do about it. All right, where was I? At first glance, Instagram appears to offer a much better deal for everyone than Kodak. The gray Rochester factory has been upgraded to a Mexican hippie resort. A tall dude lies in a hammock on the Pacific beach and, inspired by his girlfriend, invents an awesome photo-sharing app. 2 months later, that free app is available for instant download. 3 years later, the billion-dollar app has become a second plot line for its 150 million users, with "Meanwhile on Instagram" being the preface for a whole generation of internet users. Software, as Mark Anderson likes to boast, is eating the world. Everybody wins. 150 million people can't be wrong, right? Wrong. There's a catch, though. As James Surowiecki, totally destroyed his name, sorry, James, warns in a 2013 New Yorker piece titled "Gross Domestic Freebie" about the Instagram economy. And it's a very big catch indeed. Digitalization doesn't require a lot of workers. You can come up with an idea, write a piece of software, and distribute it to hundreds of millions of people with ease. Surowiecki explains, quote, that's fundamentally different from physical products, which require much more labor to produce and distribute, unquote, which is what I just explained to you, supply chain. The supply chain, along the way, creates wealth. But again, as all the fucking global warming wackos and millennials, the supply chain also creates environmental destruction. And again, we see the conflict, right? The environmentalist wacko and the millennial, they want the digital products because they think they're ending environmental destruction. But at the same time, by ending the supply chain, ending the environmental destruction, they're putting all of these people out of jobs, and they're making these people poor. And then the environmentalist wacko and the millennial will whine about inequality in the economics. Instagram is a perfect example of Surowiecki's catch. Software might be eating the world, but it's ravenously consuming our jobs, too. When Kevin Systrom had his aha idea on that Mexican beach, he had one partner in bourbon, another Stanford graduate, a Brazilian-born engineer named Mike Krieger. Together, Streisam and Krieger wrote the initial software that used the Apple App Store to distribute the app. And even when they sold Instagram to Facebook for $1 billion in April 2012, Instagram still only had 13 full-time employees working out of a small office in downtown San Francisco. This is a valid point. When people say, well, the internet's going to create work for people and okay, 13 employees at Instagram compared to how many employees had jobs at Kodak. Again, I'm not trying to tell you that Instagram should be against the law or some shit. Okay? I'm not saying I'm pointing to the obvious. Stating the obvious. This is what we're doing here. That's why the podcast is called Stating the Obvious. Okay? Kodak manufactured physical products, employed hundreds of thousands of people, directly and indirectly. Instagram, digital product, does essentially the same thing the Kodak Corporation did for the end user, allow them to take pictures, employs 14 people. When you automate things, when you computerize things, when you digitize things, right? The assembly lines making automobiles. When you replace the workers with robots, sure, you create some jobs for people who maintain the robots. But hell, you can make robots with a factory staffed by robots. So yes, you do create some jobs, people designing the robots, people maintaining the robots, but you lose all the jobs of all the people who manufactured the automobiles. Am I saying you shouldn't have robots? No, I'm not saying. I'm not making any judgment calls at all. I am simply pointing out what happens. There are benefits. There are detriments. What is the solution? Well, we know the solution. It's called anarcho-capitalism. The solution is a society in which people own their own homes and can save money and could grow their own food, and losing your job wouldn't be a big deal. But we don't live in that society. A society where you're not forced to buy Obamacare. Society where you're not forced to pay taxes to continue to be alive. Okay. I'm not coming down on the side of Kodak or Instagram. Simply pointing out that Instagram destroys jobs. No, that's not a typo. Instagram really did have just 13 full-time employees when Facebook paid $1 billion for the startup. Meanwhile, in Rochester, Kodak was closing 13 factories and 130 photo labs, laying off 47,000 workers. And those thousands of Kodak employees weren't the only professional victims of selfie economics. Professional photographers have been badly hit too. Between 2000 and 2012, the number of professional photographers, artists, and photographers working on American newspapers, fake news, fell from 6,171 to 3,493. A 43% drop at a time when pictures have become more sexy than words, and we are taking trillions of photos a year. So who exactly is doing the work, providing all the labor in a billion-dollar startup that employed only 13 people? Oh, I think you know where this is going if you've ever listened to this podcast. Who is it? Yeah. Oh, look, the corporation said, oh, look how much money Apple has. Who keeps buying their shit? You do. I wonder who's doing all the work for Instagram. I wonder who it is that worked for free to make Instagram worth $1 billion. Who could that have been? Mm. So, who exactly is doing the work? Providing all the labor in a billion-dollar startup that employed only 13 people? We are. The 150 million of us members of the new Snap Nation. Kevin Systrom's creation is the quintessential idea factory of our new digital age. In contrast with the old industrial factory, that former skyscraper on the corner of Factory and State in downtown Rochester, these 21st century factories are as ubiquitous as selfies, existing wherever there is a networked device. You may be reading this on one right now. You almost certainly have one in your pocket or on your desk. And it's our labor on these little devices, our incessant tweeting, posting, searching, updating, reviewing, commenting, and snapping, that is creating all the value in the networked economy. And again, this is the difference. Unlike when you work for Kodak, at least Kodak gives you something. They gave you some money. They gave you some healthcare benefits. They gave you a retirement plan. You're working for Instagram. You're working for Facebook. They're not giving you, I know, but I can stay in touch with my family. I can go on Facebook. I can like the diversity page on Facebook. And I liked it. And I can virtue signal. Yeah, but you can't buy groceries with virtue signaling. You can't pay your taxes. Because, you know, all those missiles that Hussein Obama fired at Muslims from flying robots and killed them, I mean, those have to be paid for. You can't pay for those fucking missiles and those flying robots with your fucking virtue signaling. You have to pay taxes to the government so the government can pay the corporations. Remember the evil corporations? Did you know the military-industrial complex is made up of corporations? Oh my God! No way! Oh my God! The rich are getting richer! We need to shoot more missiles at Muslims from flying robots! Oh my God! How much does that missile cost? Ah, who cares? Obama's half black! He's the Messiah! Ah, ah. Well, you can't pay for that fucking deficit with virtue signaling. You need money for that. You're not making any money working for Facebook and Instagram. You're not. It's not just Instagram, of course, that has been able to build a massive business with the tiniest of workforces. There's WhatsApp, the San Francisco-based instant messaging platform that was acquired by Facebook for $19 billion. I get these spam mails. You have a new message on WhatsApp. I didn't even know this was a real thing. I thought it was like just a joke or like a, not a joke, but I thought it was just something that the spammers wrote to try to fool you into clicking it. I didn't even know this was a real thing. Really? It's an instant messaging platform? It's instant messaging. It's text messaging. Text messaging, which is already built into every cell phone. Even my flip phone has text messaging. Text messaging, it's built into every cell phone on the planet. This is an instant messaging platform acquired by Facebook for $19 billion fucking dollars? How in the fuck can a piece of I'm serious about this guy. I am a capitalist pig. This is a serious fucking question. How in the fuck can a piece of software that lets people send text messages, which ain't exactly rocket science in the year 2017. How in the fuck can that be worth $19 billion? I want somebody to fucking explain that to me. And again, the only possible answer to that is because it's pushing advertisements and collecting personal data, which can be sold to corporations. Here's another thing I want to throw. At what point does making money by collecting people's personal data and sell it to corporations, at what point does that bubble burst? I mean, at what point does every corporation already have your fucking email address or your cell phone number and a data profile on you that tells them what you like and don't like and what you want to buy and don't want to buy? I mean, seriously, how much longer can the making money by collecting people's personal information and selling it? I mean, how much longer can that be a viable fucking business model? In December 2013, WhatsApp... That's the stupidest fucking WhatsApp. Who named that? WhatsApp handled 54 billion messages from its 450 million users, yet it only employs 55 people to maintain its service. Quote, WhatsApp is everything wrong with the U.S. economy, unquote, argues Robert Reich, who is a fucking idiot, and being quoted doesn't exact, well, anyway, he's an idiot. Who served as Secretary of Labor, as if Robert Reich has ever done any labor in his life, in the Clinton administration. Fortunately, the only Clinton administration, because Hillary lost the election, thank the gods. About a service that's not providing any jobs and is compounding the winner-takes-all economics of the digital marketplace. It's one of the greatest ironies of our supposedly technology-rich digital age. In contrast with the industrial economy, the quality of the technology is secondary. When Facebook and Twitter fought a bidding war to acquire Instagram, they weren't competing for Kevin Systrom's cheap off-the-shelf photography. Cheap off-the-shelf photography filters or the code that he and Mies Krieger slapped together in a few months. What they were paying for was you and me. They wanted us, our labor, our productivity, our network, our supposed creativity. It's the same reason Yahoo acquired the microblogging network Tumblr with its 300 million users and just 178 employees. For $1.1 billion, billion with a B, in May 2013. Or why in November 2013, Facebook made its $3 billion cash offering for the photography sharing app Snapchat with its mere 20 employees. And that's why Evan Spiegel, Snapchat's 23-year-old Stanford-educated CEO, turned down Facebook's $3 billion offer for his 20-person startup. Yes, that's right. He actually turned down $3 billion in cash for his 2-year-old startup. But you see, Spiegel's minuscule app company, which 6 months after rejecting Facebook's $3 billion deal, was negotiating a new round of financing with the Chinese internet giant Alibaba at a rumored, $10 billion, $10 billion valuation. Isn't really as tiny as it seems. Its workers actually include around 25% of all cell phone users in the United Kingdom and 50% of all cell phone users in Norway who, according to Spiegel, actively use the Snapchat app. And of course, none of whom are actively paid for making Snapchat worth $10 billion. And then you want to whine, those of you out there who are egalitarians, who hate the rich. You want to whine about the rich people becoming richer, and then you want to pull out your cell phone and you fucking want to send a message on Snapchat. The rich people, I don't know how many times I can fucking explain this to you people. Rich people are rich because Number one, you give them your money. You give your money to the rich people, whether it's directly by buying the iPhone or whether it's indirectly by buying the iPhone and using Instagram and Snapchat on the iPhone and putting shit on it and following everybody and somehow or another making it worth money. I still don't understand how fucking Snapchat could possibly be worth $10 billion. I don't. There's no actual value. There's nothing there other than advertising to people, and you look at the advertising, it must work on somebody, otherwise it wouldn't be worth money, and you put your personal information on there because you're stupid and the corporations sell it to each other. Okay, it's you. Whether you're buying the iPhone or whether you're using Snapchat and Instagram, you're making the rich people rich. The second way rich people become rich is the government gives them tax breaks, the government gives them free shit, the government throws people out of their homes so the corporation can build a fucking sports stadium. The government makes it legal in the tax code for Google to fucking have their money offshore and not pay taxes on it. Where does the government come from? It comes from the voters. You voted for that. It's you. When you sit here and you look around you and go, oh my God, there's homeless people, and there's unemployment, and there's all these poor people. Stop your fucking virtue signaling and deal with the fact that the poor are getting poorer and the rich are getting richer. Whether it's really happening or whether you just think it's happening, I don't give a shit. I'm happy to sit here and pretend it's happening. It's because of you. You keep buying the shit. You keep electing the politicians. And if the corporations are going to shit all over you and take your money and piss in your face, I don't blame them. We'll be back with the next part in this series because there's still plenty more to go.